This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome everyone to the Brit Rest Roundtable. With me is not Rob, who's studying something. Is it economy? I don't know.
Economy. No. Yeah, something like that.
So with me is Ollie Course.
Hello. I'm no longer. Well, I am still studying, but for the night I'm off because I've just had an exam, so I'm ready to talk some wrestling.
How did the exam go?
Surprisingly well, actually. Much better than maybe I was expecting. So I'm in a good mood. So no burials this time.
Excellent. Well, there's no Thatcher on the shows that we're covering today, so
exactly.
You should be fine. So this evening we're going to be talking about the Global Cruiserweight Series qualifiers that have recently taken place in the UK. We'll be looking through RevPro's recent Epic Encounter show in Reading, which has gone on their new on-demand service. And we'll also be looking at Chapter 29, The Progress, which was about 2 weeks ago now. Also possibly touching on 28 in between, which we'll see. Depends how we're doing. But we're going to kick it off with the Global Cruiserweight Series qualifiers. These were kind of spoiled by Triple H himself when he announced that Zack Sabre Jr. and Noam Dar were going to be competing, and then they were in qualifying matches.
Yeah.
It was kind of obvious that they were going to win.
Yeah, there's no real way of saving face on that one. That's just a rookie mistake by Uncle Paul there.
Yeah, you think he'd know better by now. But then NXT are kind of spoilerific, aren't they? Because they tape
that's true.
Like a month before they did like a month's worth of taping at a time. So
I feel like since these are, you know, qualifiers, I mean, spoiling the qualifiers doesn't really mean that much. It kind of puts egg on the face of RevPro and Progress. But, you know, the match is still delivered despite two out of the three knowing the victor in advance. So, it is what it is.
Yeah, it's unfortunate for the guys that were kind of booked to lose because, you know, you looked at them and thought, well, are they just in there because they want someone who's going to lose? Which is the case with the RevPros took place on May the 1st, I think. Well, yeah, May the 1st. That was Josh Bodum against Noam Dar. Josh Bodum, if you are selecting somebody from RevPro to represent the company as a cruiserweight, he'd probably be your guy. Whereas Noam Dar hasn't worked for RevPro for quite some time.
This was a big problem with, well, a big problem that I saw when the matches were announced. You know, you had Pete Dunne, who's pushed in RevPro, but hasn't appeared on a Progress Chapter show in almost like 2 years. And then he's going out representing Progress. Whereas Noam Dar, who's been in ICW for the last several months, just suddenly comes back to RevPro. And gets the shot there. It was odd, to say the least, but guys weren't in the positions you'd necessarily expect them to be in, which again kind of dampened it a
it's
bit.
It's not like once they can say no, though. They're not really in a position
exactly.
To say, oh, I don't think that's the right guy to be winning in this promotion, but such is the issues with working with them. WWE, they're not exactly going to want to push your agenda. They're going to want to push theirs. But the extra eyes that these companies are getting on them as a result of it is a real bonus for them.
They've got hundreds of thousands of views on YouTube, these little highlight clips of the three matches. So, yeah, if even just a small percentage of people who watch those clips then go and search them out further, that's a boon. So they've definitely benefited from featuring it, even if the booking had to be a little bit weird to get there.
Yeah, well, in the long run, it's only going to help them out, having that association. After the match between Bodum and Dar in RevPro, Marty Skill came out and decided to address the elephant in the room, and that's that he wasn't named in any of the qualifiers. Which is interesting, because he's saying, I don't do tryouts. Like, you know how good I am, either book me or don't.
Yeah.
How much of that is kind of a shoot, and how much of it is like, maybe he's going to be in it anyway and just get named at a later date? I don't really know.
Well, we'll have to see. But I wouldn't be shocked if he got a place despite not being in any of the qualifiers. And he and Zack Sabre Jr. are the two guys who are ready for that level of competition out of everyone. Like, they've got the characters, the confidence, the wrestling ability. They've got the whole package. They're the ones ready to step up to the next level out of everyone. So, Marty, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see who's there come the summer.
Well, the guys that they've selected, it seemed like they were picking deliberately different-looking guys. I mean, like Sabre, he has a very specific look. Then Jack Gallagher, you know, the whole circus strongman from the 20s look that he's got going on is completely different. And then Noam Dar, just for name and accent alone, is completely different to those two guys.
Mm-hmm. They certainly represent different aspects of British wrestling. Yeah. But all of them, none of them are really high flyers. Like, this has been a bit of a theme along with the Evolve guys in the qualifiers. None of them are cruiserweight. Stereotypical cruiserweights, you know.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. You have to feel that there's going to be luchadors involved, so maybe it's just to kind of offset the high flying nature of those guys. And you would think there'd be more Japanese talent involved, and there's 32 names going to be in there, so maybe they want the European guys to be very much grounded mat wrestlers.
Yeah, which makes sense.
I can't argue with that.
And Zack Sabre Jr. has to be a strong contender to win the whole thing or go very far. I think Gallagher and Dar may only be there to lose in the first round or the second round, but Sabre Jr. could go all the way.
Yeah, I mean, you would have thought the winner is either going to be somebody who's under contract at present, or it'll be somebody who they want to sign.
Yeah,
and that'll be the way that they bring them in. Which I think is probably the most likely outcome, but it really all depends on the people that they've got in mind. If they're looking at Kota Ibushi, then maybe he's the shoo-in for the whole thing if they're going to sign him. But yeah, Sabre, strong contender, should be deep into the tournament semi-finals at least, which will be good exposure for the old Brit Rest scene.
Definitely. Just like the whole the trio of matches have been with, I think collectively they're coming up on 1 million views on YouTube, so that's really good promotion for those two companies.
Okay, so RevPro have just started their on-demand service, and one of the first big shows that they've had a chance to upload onto it is the Epic Encounter show that they ran in Reading. In the middle of April, April the 16th. I was kind of tempted to go down to this one when I heard about the card, but I was working on the Saturday day, so I didn't really have a chance because it kicked off sort of mid-afternoon. The card they had for it was, as I discussed with Galazzo Dan last time out, was a really strong card. It got slightly less strong when the show rolled around because Will Ospreay had buggered his knee up. So he wasn't fit to compete. So Michael Elgin, in the opening match, faced off instead with Ricochet, who was due to be competing in the main event. He was doing double duty. So did you see this one, Ollie?
Yeah, indeed. Elgin and Ricochet, a really good opener, like really strong indie, super indie kind of matchup. Between two guys who don't really get the opportunity to wrestle each other. I don't know if they've ever had a singles match with each other. I certainly haven't seen it. Obviously,
in Japan, they kept yeah, apart definitely. Because of weight differences, and Ricochet is defined as a junior, and Elgin's a heavy.
And it was a really explosive way to open the show. Both of these guys have big, satisfying move sets. I couldn't really find anything at fault with this. It wasn't I was going to say it wasn't an epic encounter, but I guess it was since it was on this show. But yeah, it was a really fun way to start the show.
At the start of the match, I was a little bit worried that Ricochet was going to take it easy because he had another match later in the show, and it was the big important main event match. But after he kind of took it easy for about 5 minutes, and then I think he just thought, "Well, fuck it," and there was a lot of crazy spots down the stretch towards the end of the match. Elgin took it in the end with the Elgin bomb. Of course, he did. But yeah, it's a solid back and forth match for an opener. Straight from there, we went into Josh Bodum against Big Donny Dijak. Big Donny has come over before and wrestled Josh and lost. So this was I kind of thought this was going to be a revenge match for him, a chance to square up a series, but it didn't work out that way.
It was a really heated opening. He had a really good crowd brawl, one of the best crowd brawls I've seen all year. I'm not really a big fan of that whole style, but the intensity was there. The commentators really got over that they hated each other. Dijak, he's certainly improved since the last time I've seen him. He's got really intense facial expressions. He could be something really good. Both of these guys could be something really good in the future. They're both still a little raw, but they put their best foot forward here, definitely.
He looks about 7 foot tall, because he's always in there with the small indie guys. And when you're doing a Fosbury flop over the ropes, looking that tall, it makes you look very impressive.
So yeah, I thought both guys looked really impressive here. This is a kind of a weird thing. I found that they did the big things right. They got hit some really big moves, won the crowd over a bit. But then a few of the little things were a bit missing, and it was a bit obvious to see. Like when Bodum went for the pin and scored the pin on Dijak, Dijak's hand was sort of under the rope. I feel like a more experienced wrestler would have noticed that, moved the hand, and completed the cover.
Well, so, they're both young guys.
Yeah, both 22.
Same age as Will Ospreay.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of good young guys coming through. Obviously, some are more advanced than others, but both these guys are going to learn. Dijak's improved a lot recently. Bodum, over the past year and a half, has gotten really good. He must have been in the gym quite a lot. His upper body looks a bit more wrestler-like.
Yeah.
It used to be a bit sort of pudgy, but he's kind of got that down now as well. They're both looking like good workers. So I enjoyed the match. I didn't so much enjoy the camera work. I don't know if you noticed, but the ringside guy, the fellow with the ponytail, don't know his name, but he decided to start doing the old WWE zoom out on the punches gimmick.
Didn't do it
particularly well.
This has been a criticism of RevPro's production, I've heard from a few people. I don't really see it. I just don't notice that sort of thing. But some people, they don't like the camera switching and, the WWE, in and out thing.
Yeah, see, I hate it when the WWE do that. So, an indie copy in them is just going to annoy me. And I thought he was having a seizure or something. It was that fast in and out. It's ridiculous. But yeah, if people like that, then you were kind of stuck with it. But I hate it.
Yeah, I don't notice it, but I have heard people talk about it. So yeah,
you not suddenly feel motion sick in the middle of the match.
Also, I do enjoy a good throwing a guy through several rows of chairs spot, and Dijak delivered a big one to Bodum here, so that was very satisfying. Very well, yeah.
Moving on from that one, we had more revolutionists action with Shah Samuels and James Castle defending their British Tag Team Championship against Johnny and Jody. Johnny Storm and Jody Fleisch going after tag gold in 2016. What a time to be alive.
Not much here for me on this one. I'm not really there for the nostalgia of Storm and Fleisch since I wasn't around during their heyday. So, and, you know, a revolutionist's shtick does nothing for anyone, really. So,
no, not really. And they've been tag champions for, it feels like years. I looked it up, it's about 10 months, but it feels longer.
It's been almost a year. It'll be a year soon. And they've done literally nothing in that year, and they faced like Tenkoji and Bullet Club and
Johnny and Jody.
Nothing.
The one part about this that I think worked really well was Chris Roberts getting the accidental body slam on Shah Samuels.
Wonderful. Terrific. I love that.
Probably the worst looking body slam I've ever seen, but it made me laugh.
Sort of cradled him and then dropped him. And Shah Samuels essentially did an Ibushi and like dumped himself. That was
Yeah. But I was kind of getting the whole Kogan Andre the Giant WrestleMania 3 flashbacks there with the with the height that he got on it, which wasn't very much.
But yeah, a nothing match and a DQ finish, and get the titles off them already. Put them on frickin' Jake McCluskey for all I care. Anything is better than this.
And anyone else at this point. You'd hope they're kind of building up to a big change at some point. I don't know what they're really planning, because they don't really have a tag team division to speak of, unless they're planning on putting the belts on Sabre and Skull, which, I mean, you'd think at some point they're going to have a match. That seems to be the main crux of their booking at the moment, is that Sabre kind of...
We'll talk about where they're going with the leaders a little bit later.
Okay, yeah, we've got that in the main event. But they're really the only tag team that they've got that they're featuring on the shows. So it seems odd to me that they're not building somebody up from like somewhere. So either they're going to bring in a super team to win the belts, or something else is in the works. So we shall see. Next matchup was Big Damo against Roderick Strong. Another real good showing from Damo. Strong showing against Strong.
Damo continues to look really good, to no one's surprise. And Roddy is still over with the heel shtick in Britain. So, good stuff. The match started a bit slowly, but it picked up towards the end as they sort of got to know each other a little bit with how they worked. Got more comfortable in the ring. Nothing to complain about.
Roddy couldn't wrestle like his usual match because of Damo's size. So it was kind of interesting to see him work around it, kind of focus more on his strikes. Because a backbreaker on Damo is not likely. You probably wouldn't want to even attempt it, because you're just going to hurt yourself. They did like one backbreakery type spot where it didn't even land, because I think Roderick was worried about the state of his knees, and then Damo took it with the Ulster plantation.
Yeah, it was
Kind
of a sudden finish. I thought they could have gone a little with a little bit more time, but big win for Damo. He got a win over Bailey earlier. He got the win with Strong here. I feel like you can beat the American indie guys in a way that you can't beat those New Japan main eventers. So they've sort of done it a bit backwards.
They did put him over Ishii as well. So he has racked up some big wins. But do you think they're building him up to be like a big star for them, like a big main event guy?
Well, he was against Zack Sabre Jr. in a British heavyweight title match at the Live at the Cockpit show that happened 4 days ago, which will eventually air on RevPro TV. So that'll be a match to watch out for, to see what he does against the best of the best in Sabre Jr.
Yeah. It's always interesting to see what guys do against Sabre, because he can have that match with anyone where he just kind of works the arm over and but against a guy like Damo, like a different size guy, different style, it should be interesting to see what happens. After the match, with Damo calling himself the best big man in the world, that brought Big Mike back out.
Wonderful.
That's right. Hashtag Big Mike. So presumably they're going to have a match. You think that's going to be on your call?
Well, it depends which your call is it going to be. Sabre Jr. versus Angle or Summer Sizzler? We don't know yet. Is Damo booked for the first one? Or will it be Summer Sizzler?
I'm kind of leaning towards it being Summer Sizzler because yeah. That would be quite a big contest.
Definitely.
But literally.
The biggest contest.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's Big Mike and Bigger Damo. He's a big lad. He's in the big lads division. Speaking of which, Michael Elgin would be a particularly good challenger for whoever wins that title in progress.
Definitely. Well, Damo is in the tournament, I believe. So.
Yeah, he is. He's in one of the blocks. I forget which. Those blocks have not really been that clearly defined for me. It's like you don't really see like a table after.
Well,
just
before we came on air, they announced that they're doing like a tag team match in the Atlas tournament. So it's not a straight G1 here. They're gonna be doing a bit of a TNA Bound for Glory thing where they're throwing in bonus matches or whatever. So we'll see how that plays out.
The actual final match will be on the Brixton show.
Yeah, they did.
So, we've kind of gone off on a little bit of a tangent there, getting ahead of ourselves.
Back to Epic Encounter.
Yes, back to Epic Encounter and the Epic Encounter of Pete Dunne versus ACH.
Oh, man. Pete Dunne is putting in work right now. He's becoming a star, like, in front of us right now. With these matches. He had another really good match with ACH here. ACH really delivered. Like, the chops he delivered throughout the match were just great. Loved that. Just a real good cruiserweight matchup. Like, lots of fast action. Pete Dunne isn't like a traditional cruiserweight, but he can certainly still flip around a bit. So
he's a bruiserweight.
He is a bruiserweight.
ACH has come along a lot in the last 2 years. And he's now at the age where he needs to start thinking about like what his big move is going to be. Is he going to go to Japan maybe he's going to go to WWE?
He is kind of wasting away on those Ring of Honor mid cards.
Yeah, like, and he's gotten good to the point where somebody else should be looking at him now.
Yeah, like either push him to the main event of Ring of Honor or head off to Florida or Tokyo, you know?
Yeah, he's ready for that spot.
Yeah.
Pete is another one of the 22 years old crowd, which you kind of look at that the guys that are in that age bracket and think in about, 3, maybe 4 years' time, there's going to be some sensational matchups going on.
Definitely. Like,
just because they're all coming up together. It's like what you have with Sabre and Skrull and Haskins. When they all kind of came through at the same time, that they knew each other and that kind of allowed them to build chemistry over time. There's a whole load of guys at the moment who are all coming through together.
Yeah, it's very exciting in a couple of years' time. Like, let's think about the amount of talent there will be, because they'll not only be the veterans by that point of Sabre Jr. or whoever, if they're not already under lock and key somewhere else. And then there'll be.
I kind of get the feeling Sabre will not be around.
Yeah.
In like 3 years.
But, you know, Haskins, etc. And there'll also be this current crop of new talent, and then there'll be a new crop of new talent, and it'll just keep growing and growing.
It's good to see. I mean, like, I think we can't remember how many episodes ago it was because I can't remember which one this is, but we were talking about. The possibility of losing the likes of Sabre, Skrull, Ospreay, and who would step into that void. But with every passing show that I watched, there seems to be another candidate pop up where you think, well, he's kind of good now, but like, give him give him 6 months, give him a year, and he's going to be ready to step into that breach.
We're sort of seeing that with another tangent here, but the Progress Super Strong Style 16 lineup so far, no Osprey, no Skull, probably not going to be in the last few announcements. Well, we know Osprey isn't going to be in it, and Skull probably isn't because he's the champion. So the two like major guys in Progress aren't going to be in it. It's a big opportunity for the Dunns and the Gallaghers and the Gibsons to step up and be the stars of that tournament.
Well, so, there will always be spots available.
And I think these guys are ready to fill them. Like, I feel there won't be any drop-off of quality. Like, even losing a superstar like Osprey to New Japan, not on a full-time basis, but on a part-time basis at least, I don't think that's going to necessarily drop the talent.
He has signed, so he's in New Japan for 2 years now. That's pretty much guaranteed. So while he's in New Japan, there is always the possibility of him wrestling in the UK. So we've got at least 2 years of part-time Osprey. So we've at least got that going for us. And then after that, who knows?
Mm. Anyway, tangent over. That's
serious
business.
Back to Peter
Lord Gideon Gray.
I just need to address the finish on Dunn and ACH. And that is the name of his finisher, which they called it the Drop Dead Pump Handle Face Buster.
What?
That seems...
Oh, no, I know why it's called that. This is obscure knowledge coming in. This is because in... not in Rev Pro, he has some generic theme music in Rev Pro. But in Progress, Pete Dunne's theme music is by Bring Me the Horizon, and the lead singer of Bring Me the Horizon has a clothing line called Drop Dead. I know this because I used to go out with a girl who obsessed over Bring Me the Horizon, so my knowledge from strange things happening a few years ago now all comes around, and I know why a wrestling move is called that. Yes.
That's good information. But why didn't he just call it the Drop Dead, I guess? It just seems like the, it's like a little bit long-winded. It's like Perry Saturn had the moss-covered family three-handled credenza at one point.
Yeah.
It just seemed a little bit excessive. I was just wondering whether his Drop Dead Pump Handle Facebuster was also moss-covered. But,
no, it's in the 1004 move, surely.
It's got to be in there somewhere. It's kind of like a spinning flapjack thing. This is why I don't call the wrestling matches. Anyway, now we can move on to Princess Unicorn.
Yes.
Gideon Gray, praise the Lord, was up against Dalton Castle. I was really hoping for like a blowaway comedy match here, but what I got was actually a very solid wrestling match.
Yeah, I
which
enjoyed
was kind
this
of
one.
Unexpected.
I thought this was Gideon's best outing yet. The entrances alone would have been worth the price of admission because they were fabulous. and Gray on promo is just he's a joy. But I thought this was his best wrestling showing so far. It helps when you're in there with a guy like Castle, who was just throwing Gray all around the ring, and like he's a legitimately great like Greco-Roman style pro wrestler, and that's exciting to see.
You kind of forget that because he's got this such an over the top gimmick.
Yeah.
It's all about like peacocking. But his actual like technical skill is, it's very solid.
Yeah, he'd belong with American Alpha any day.
Yeah, that's the level that he's operating on, and you kind of forget that just because he's so flamboyant.
And then Gray worked around that well with like little heel moves, and yeah, just a generally very satisfying match to watch.
With Gideon Gray, it's like he is a comedy wrestler,
yeah,
and yet he doesn't have many comedy spots. So I'm quite pleased that he's put something into his arsenal, which is, I can only assume it's vertigo, is that he can't bear going up to the top rope, and he has to kind of work his way down to the first one before hitting a spot. That's perfectly acceptable
strong
comedy.
Spot, yeah.
I wish he had more stuff like that that he could work into matches, because at the moment he gets a lot of cheap heat, and he's just kind of he's a guy that can put on a rest hold and then just kind of argue with the crowd for the entire time that it's on, and that's fine up to a point, but like it would be nice if he had an entertaining moveset.
Maybe
he just doesn't want to be cheered in any way, so I can understand that, but that you have to draw the line somewhere.
You see in like DDT in places in Japan where like everyone has like one or two real signature spots that they bust out every performance and like pops the crowd and then goes away again. I would like to see that from Gideon a bit, just like something like Princess Unicorn. It's a recognizable chant that you can chant every time, like just one or two moves that you know are coming, and then they can play with it a bit, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly what I want from him. Every time he's up against somebody who's really funny, I keep expecting it to be, oh, this will be the match that he has me in stitches. And because just his face alone, he's got so much personality just in his looks that you know he's got something in there. There's got to be something to, you know, like a certain X factor that will bring him up to that level. But yeah, the climbing down off the top rope thing, that was good. If you can find more stuff like that, which is not easy, but it more of that would be good.
We don't know how old the Lord is either. He might be one of these young'uns, even though he may not look it.
Well, he's a bit of an Ugmo, so in terms of age, it's kind of he's harder to judge. Unattractive people in terms of their age, it's harder to tell, but he knows he's not a work of art, so I'm sure he won't take that personally. But so main event was the leaders of the New School against Matt Sydal and Ricochet. We haven't really touched upon this, but the leaders in this case are the tag team of Marty Scurll and Zack Sabre Jr. have been around for around 8 years as a team. Admittedly, not an awful lot after the first three of those, because Sabre went to Japan. But, you know, they started out when the top talent was like Doug Williams, Johnny Storm, Jody Fleisch, guys like that. Started out in IPW UK and then expanded out into like the likes of Premier Promotions, FWA, WXW in Germany. Wrestle for 1PW on their last show. So they got to that point pretty quickly where they'd spread out and got good. But then when Sabre went to Japan, that was kind of the end of it. And it was only like an every now and again thing. This is like the first match they've had in over a year as a tag team. And the last match they had in as a team in Rev Pro was 4 years ago. So it was interesting to see them come back together, even if it's just for one match. But the dynamic that they had was great.
Like, they're obviously real life best friends, so like they work together great. They have a lot of fun in the ring, which is evident. Like whenever they're in a singles match against each other, they're always doing little comedy spots and enjoying them, like enjoying life, enjoying enjoying their work. What? There's nothing better than that, really. And it's a joy to watch, definitely.
The uniqueness of it at the moment is that you've got Sabre, currently the champion, British champion. Marty Scurll is the number one contender for that title. He won that back in January, but has since said on RevPro TV that he won't challenge while Sabre is the champion. This all seems to be leading to some kind of long storyline where he won't challenge and won't challenge. But Sabre has kind of been bossing him around a little bit. Sabre being the babyface, Scurll being the heel. Even if Scurll gets cheered nowadays, he's still the heel.
It's a very interesting dynamic that they've got on, and something I've never really seen before. And they're certainly hinting at a little bit of tension. And that's Sabre Jr.'s personality as a wrestler. He is a bit of a boss. Like, I would say he sort of bosses people around in the ring, and that sort of extends his character out of the ring as well. So So it's no surprise they're going in that direction. And then Skull, the finish of this match, he hits Seidel with the umbrella to allow Sabre Jr. to hook him in the armbar and tap him out. Which is, it was a delightful finish, because it just shows what Marty's real character is. And even though he's friends with Sabre Jr., he's still the villain. He's still going to cheat. And eventually, this is all going to boil over, and they're going to have a match, and it's going to be very, very exciting to see what gets them there.
Yeah, that's the intrigue of the whole thing. Because after the match with Bodum and Darth, they ran an angle where Dar was getting a shooing from the revolutionists, and Sabre comes out, walks into the ring, just flat out tells him to stop, and then orders Skull to the back and like walks out of the ring, and Skull just kind of, you know, tail between legs, follows him, followed then by all the rest of the revolutionists, as if to, oh, well, if Marty's being told he's got to go out the back, then we've got to go as well. Mm. So they've got a number of different ways they can go with this. And
something you said earlier about them challenging revolutionists. This is what I was thinking about. This is how this is all going to boil over, because Marty has the dual allegiances to his boy, Sabre Jr., and his boys, revolutionists. He's going to
remember they've done that angle already with Jimmy Havoc.
Oh, yeah.
Where Skull sided with the revolutionists when Bodum and Havoc were feuding.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens with this. Certainly, I think it's the best angle that they've done since that Bodum Havoc feud. I think this is the best work they've done, character and storyline wise. So I'm really excited to see where they go with it. About this match, really good match. If you're only going to watch, like cherry pick the very best of the best to watch this year, and you've got that RevPro subscription, then make sure you catch this one.
Definitely. The last few minutes especially is just like some classic world-class wrestling. So yeah, no. Oh, this entire show, there wasn't apart from the tag team match, there wasn't a dud match. So six very strong matches, very well worth your time to go and watch.
Yeah, very solid show. Very impressed. It's a shame that they didn't really hype it as much as they do the Your Call shows. And I think the crowd that they got as a result was... Rob said he felt that the crowd was very quiet live because he actually went to this show. Whereas if you watch it on tape, they must have mic'd up the building extremely well, because it doesn't sound like a quiet crowd. Yeah, so you've only seen the video on demand version. Did you think the crowd was good? Because it was kind of hard to hear the crowd volume.
The crowd didn't seem to be amazing, but I didn't get the picture that there were any like four people chanting, as was reported. It was middling generic crowd. It wasn't like super hyped or anything, but it wasn't like dead quiet either. It was a respectful crowd, I would say.
I think I put that down to the lack of hype for the show. I mean, I only actually heard about it the week of the show, which is not really enough time to prepare to go and see something.
Yeah. Also, we've both been in the building, and we know it's not exactly an echo chamber. Like all the sound goes.
Yeah,
up,
it just goes, doesn't it? Center, disappears.
So. It doesn't help. That doesn't help either. Also, you know, Reading, like, it's not exactly the bastion of wrestling, so.
No, not really. It's not really a hotbed. But you'd think quite a lot of the London crowd would go out for that.
Yeah, it's
one,
not but, that far away from London, that's true. But maybe people are just lazy.
People from London are just terrified of leaving that, you know, because it's past the M25. It's, it's a different world.
Like, is that the north or something?
It's more west, but yeah, so that was the RevPro show. We are going to move on to the Progress shows now. Ollie, did you have anything to add to our chapter 28 analysis from last time? I actually hadn't seen the show when we talked about it, but Dan had, so he kind of ran through the whole thing. Anything you wanted to add to that?
I think you and Dan covered it pretty well. I will say that Mustache Mountain looked fantastic on their debut as a team in progress. And it's great to see Trent Seven getting an opportunity in progress and Rev Pro, like, just within the same month. Like, he's had a great month, almost a breakout month. He's one of those Midlands guys who hasn't yet really given any sort of opportunity to strike it big on one of these on-demand, thousand-person crowd shows. So let's hope he gets on a chapter show, maybe in the Strong Style, or maybe in one of the York Hall shows, because he is really good. And, like, he's also, like, a tremendous character. Like, he's so charismatic, just without really trying. He's got that sort of Zack Sabre Jr.-esque sort of quiet charisma to him.
Tagging with Tyler Bate, then that's pretty much a guaranteed ticket right there, especially in progress where they've got a strong tag team division. I think they'd be good assets there.
Mm, definitely. But we'll move straight on to Chapter 29, which I was lucky enough to go see. Instead of revising, I went down to London for the day. And they started straight off with the Atlas Tournament. Big Damo versus Michael Dante, the big lads division. Kind of just a warm-up match for the crowd. Nothing too special. It was over in about 7 minutes, with Dante picking up the victory with a big old spear. Damo still hasn't won in progress. He debuted at Strong Style a year ago, and he still hasn't had a win. So let's hope he gets something going in the Atlas Tournament, because he is really good. So I wouldn't want him just demoted to big jobber or whatever.
They seem to have an issue identifying Damo, because they keep calling him Damo O'Connor.
Yeah.
But his name is Damien O'Connor. Damien O'Connor, Dame O. so calling him Damo O'Connor, it just seems really weird to me, and progress is the only place to do it.
Oh, yeah. He needs to nail something down with him. I like Big Damo. I think that's what I like to call him. And that's his Rev Pro name, I believe. So, and that's where...
It is, yeah. He's Big Damo in Rev Pro.
Is he Big Damo in ICW? I mean, I should know this. He's the champion in ICW, but...
I love it. He's known as Big Damo, but he's also Damien O'Connor.
But here, Dante needed the win more, because after the Sumerian Death Squad, he needs some rehabbing. He needs a win to just cement him a bit as a singles guy. So I'm not opposed to that. But after that match, we had the two Global Cruiserweight series. And it's not called that anymore. It's called the Cruiserweight Classic. So fuck you for recording your...
Classic.
Fuck you for recording your... matches with the name Global Cruiserweight Series and have that on it for posterity when everyone will know it as the Cruiserweight Classic.
I don't know, I never liked the Global Cruiserweight Series as a title, so I'm kind of glad they've changed it.
Cruiserweight Classic definitely sounds better, but they should have just stuck with it now when they had it, rather than arbitrarily change it. But whatever.
They probably got through to Vince's office and he was just like, we're not calling it that.
The atmosphere for these matches was something a bit different, I think. Like, because Jim Smallman did such a good job hyping the crowd up with the whole 1984...
He specifically told them you cannot swear during these matches.
The 1984-esque 10 seconds of swearing was like the minute's hate in 1984, and that was very enjoyable to partake in live. But there was just a little buzz, you know, that, like, Smallman was, like, really proud that his company was being featured on such a big stage, that the video would be up on WWE.com. And I feel like the rest of the crowd really bought into that and took the atmosphere in these matches up to the next level. So that was really good.
Jim is a terrific pitch, man. He really does a fantastic job. The show before, 28, he wasn't on that one. It was Glenn Joseph.
Yeah.
And Glenn, he did an okay job, but he felt like he was kind of rushing through all his sentences, and it just didn't feel the same. He didn't hype the matches the same way. So I was really glad to see Jim back.
I agree, definitely. So the first guy out was Flash Morgan Webster, who would usually elicit a nice reaction, but he's not like a huge star, but like it felt like genuinely he was a huge star in this atmosphere. So that was really good. And I think it helped him be a better wrestler and pull out like the best performance I've ever seen of him, because there was this kind of...
I was going to say, this is, I think, his best match.
definitely,
that I've ever seen. So
I enjoyed both his matches with Zach Gibson. I think he's been improving match by match pretty much every time he's out there. But this is peak Webster, I feel. And it's a shame that he got like a pretty big injury in this match.
He got two injuries. The one that looked worse was he basically got hit with like a snap dragon suplex. And he landed really hard on his shoulder. And you could see that he kept going to check on it. And you could tell he was badly hurt. Yeah, but that wasn't the bad one. He actually broke his ankle, like on a dive to the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
And that kind of looked innocuous. You wouldn't have even have noticed that it was a rough spot if he hadn't have like held his ankle just briefly afterwards. But even after that, he was still doing a load of lucha spots. Like there was nothing wrong.
It was like halfway through a match, so he wrestled for a good 7 or 8 minutes with, you know, Zack Sabre Jr., who won't baby you around in the ring with a fucking broken ankle. So,
yeah. And the shoulder injury came after that. So he had a really rough day at the office. Yeah.
So Zack Sabre Jr. was not playing around with Webster in this match. Sabre Jr. looked great. Like, he was obviously the guy qualifying, so I feel like the match was almost made to make him look good. Like, Webster didn't get too much offense in. He certainly had his spots, and he looked really good in them, but this match was more about Sabre Jr.
I think the best thing about this match is you had Flash coming in doing all the flippity lucha spots that he knows, like absolutely everything he kind of threw in there, and then Zack Sabre just destroyed him. And I think that's what they want when they're going to show the videos, kind of hyping Zack Sabre Jr. up, is like, we've got some of the world's best flyers for this tournament, but this guy, this is what he does to flyers.
Yeah. And the finish of that perfectly summed that up, because he did the Evolve Will Ospreay finish where he just, like, destroys his arms in, like, I don't even know what you'd call that. Like,
I can't remember who it was. I think it might have been Rob McCarron, possibly, was going to call it the Young Boy Killer or something like that. It was one of the Voices of Wrestling guys, I'm sure, tweeted it out the other day.
I would just call it, you know, Crush Annihilation.
It's a horrific looking hold, because he forces the guy's head like onto the mat in between their legs, and then drags both the arms up into the air. Which, if you've already got like a really badly injured shoulder, which Webster had in this match, that's gotta suck. That's gotta really suck to take that spot. Immediate submission. Sabre is really brutal, though, when it comes to taking people apart, and this match is a perfect demonstration of that.
Mm-hmm. You can see Triple H's eyes light up as he watches the tape back.
The thing with Sabre is he really doesn't have a WWE physique.
He's so good anyway that it doesn't matter.
Yeah, hopefully they can see past the looks and get into the work. If they can do it with Daniel Bryan, they can do it with him.
Like, I liked that the two GCS matches were one after the other. Like, there was no calming down of the crowd. We just went straight from big hype to even more big hype, and that was really good. And I like that they put on the match with maybe the two lesser known guys second to sort of boost their match up a little and boost the two guys up, because this is Pete Dunne's return to the Electric Ballroom for the first time in 2 years. And so not many people knew who he was coming out. Like, he didn't really get much of a reaction. He sort of got a token heel reaction, but nothing real much.
Yeah, he kind of tagged on tagged with Damien on one of the Manchester shows.
He was on the Manchester show.
The last one, or the one before?
He was on the Manchester show like a week or two weeks before, but I don't. Yeah. Did most of the crowd even see that? Like, you know.
I like to think that they probably would have done, but it's a fair point. If they hadn't have seen him there, they'd probably have seen him in Rev Pro.
Yeah. I mean, that they would.
I like to think the Progress Ultras, like the 700 people that they get in there, they watch a lot of wrestling.
I would assume so, yeah. But
levels of wrestling.
He was walking in as a relative unknown compared to other guys, is what I'm trying to say. Like, he's not an established character in the Progress canon. But, like, he walked out a star. I thought his individual performance was the best of the night, and he got himself over with some fantastic heel work. And, like, he knows when to play to the crowd, knows when to take it serious in the ring. Like, he's very coordinated with the way he acquires heat and the way he just uses moves at the right time. Like, he just has that sort of innate sense that not a lot of guys have to do the right thing at the right time, and it's very intangible, I know, but...
You can't teach that. That's something that...
Yeah.
You just have it, or you don't. And people do kind of learn it in time, but to have it already... at 22, that's good for him. That's good for his development. Speaking of development, Jack Gallagher started to do a lot more World of Sports stuff. And I kind of get the feeling that Johnny Kidd's shown him a few moves.
Mm.
I think he's kind of had them handed down to him.
Yeah, time on tradition. Gallagher has certainly improved a bit. I thought last year I was a bit hit and miss on him. But in his showings this year... well, against you know who, but against Johnny Kidd. Johnny Kidd? Yeah, is that the right one?
It was Johnny Kidd.
Johnny
yeah.
Kidd, yeah.
It wasn't Johnny Saint.
Yeah. He's a bit too old for that. But against Johnny Kidd.
I wouldn't say that.
Oh, yeah. I've seen the videos.
You never know with Johnny Saint.
Hammerlocking William Regal. So. But yeah, I thought that match was really good, and Gallagher's stepped up a little bit, and he definitely deserves his place in the GCS, and I'm happy that he's like impressed the WWE enough to get that, despite not being like a big star or anything.
I was surprised he got in, but having seen his past, his work since he was named as a qualifying match, I think he definitely deserves to be in there. He's unique, which is what they're looking for. This match, I think you got to see him wrestle from underneath as well. So it's kind of the opposite of Sabre, whereas Sabre looked good in dominating a match. Gallagher looked good in getting past somebody who looked stronger than him. So it was two different kind of approaches to getting a guy over.
Completely agree with that. And I thought that really benefited the match, just without the GCS context, just the match in itself had a really good face-heel dynamic, like, as good a heel as Dunn was. Gallagher was matching that with the great face reactions. Like, he's very over with the Progress crowd. He's got, like, a fun gimmick.
It's extremely hard to be a face nowadays. Because the only way to become a face is basically to be a really good heel. So to get over as like, an actual face, that's difficult. So he's kind of done it through a lot of hard work and just plugging away and doing entertaining stuff, and it's kind of come naturally. But you look at WWE in particular, it's really hard to debut a guy as a face and have people cheer for him.
Yeah,
it's just this is the age that we live in now. It's difficult to do that because people naturally want to cheer the more interesting of two people, and like a blue-eyed baby face who slaps hands and makes wishes.
I feel like the clean cut good guy can still work, and Gallagher showed that in this match. Like, he, like, the whole build of the match was Dunn was trying to cheat and take the shortcut. Gallagher was trying to outsmart him, and
it's possible, but they have to be different. They have to connect to the crowd.
Yeah. So Gallagher has his whole, extraordinary gimmick. He does the fun stuff, you know. He has that other aspect to him. He's not just Roman Reigns being like, Roman Reigns doesn't say he's a good guy. he says he's not a good guy. But, like, he says, oh, please cheer for me because I'm the designated good guy. Gallagher does the, cheer for me because I'm fucking, like, going away at the start of a match and doing all these crazy moves and looking like Nigel Thornberry. He has other bits to his act rather than just...
I was going to go with David Thewlis. like a young David Thewlis.
Yeah. You say Thewlis, I say Thornbury because of the generational gap.
I see your Thornbury.
Yeah.
The great thing about these two matches was having a Progress crowd that was incredibly rowdy, deliberately chanting stuff that was PG.
Oh, yeah.
And their idea of PG is brilliant.
Top the, not loser.
top not loser. Bad hair, no fans. No one likes you. and chance of that was smashing. It was top crowd work. Because yeah. It's really difficult to support a match in such a kind of uncool way and yet make it entertaining for everyone that's there. So
yeah. I love Top Not Loser. Top Not Loser was chant of the night.
Okay. After the Cruiserweight Classic qualifiers had gone by, we got into the Natural Progression Series 3 final. And I thought they had a lot of pressure on them here. And Damon Moser at the start looked really nervous.
Mm.
It's he settled down as the match went on, and he kind of ended up focusing more on Eva. Damon Moser versus Pastor William Eva was the participant, so I kind of forgot to mention that. But it took him a while to settle down, and having to follow on from like two good matches, it was not easy for him.
Mm.
I think they were aided by the crowd being able to swear again, though, because they really went for it.
I didn't think Moser was ready for this spot. I said that from the semifinals.
I thought he was close. He was almost ready for it. And I think of the matches that he had during the tournament, this was easily the best one.
Oh, yeah. But I feel like if Ashton Smith had been in there instead, there would have been, a fun face-heel dynamic. People could naturally support Jesus and Boo, the Invader, Ashton Smith. But instead, people didn't really know what to make of Damon Moser because he's so bland. There's nothing to him. I'll sidetrack a bit. There was one thing that people could latch on to Moser as like a character, and that was in his entrance scene, there's a little whistle bit before he comes out. And a couple of people around me were, whistling the thing. And there's nothing more on this earth that I despise than whistling. Or public whistling. So I was just having like an aneurysm.
I don't mind crowds whistling, but if you see a guy just walking along the street whistling, I kind of want to punch him.
Yeah, I want to punch all whistlers. So that was I'm very glad that that didn't get over and turn into like an ironic chant because like, because
have been fine with that.
I couldn't deal.
Another issue for Moser is his finish is like a knee strike. If your finish is a knee strike, then you really can't do other knee strikes during the match.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if your finish is a clothesline, then you don't hit clotheslines. It's like you don't see JBL walking around in matches kind of hitting clotheslines.
Big Show hitting punches.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you can't have that. You can't use a lesser version of your finish.
Mm.
It just doesn't work. And so he was hitting knees. And I know he could possibly defend himself by saying, well, like Nakamura does it. Yeah, he's Nakamura. You're a rookie. It's a very simple tactic. You have to make your finish special. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything. So he might even have to rethink his finish because at the moment it's not getting any reaction.
Yeah, I think Moser could rethink his whole package. I think he's definitely got tools, he's got potential, he's got a good look and a good size, but there's just nothing to him. There's like, who is Damon Moser? I couldn't tell you. He's a ginger guy who has a knee as his finisher. That's all I know
he's
about
got a beard.
Him. And he can't do the whole Shane McMahon coast to coast without hitting the guy in the dick. That's all I know about him. He used to be in the Origin. Great. yeah, that's all I got. He needs a character badly, and it was difficult to get into this match, or at least not the Moser bits of the match, because I just didn't know who he was. He's had the two Natural Progression Series matches, but nothing was established there apart from he's a guy, you know?
Yeah. During the course of the Natural Progression Series 3, I was kind of waiting for the final match to ask like a big question about it, and that was going to be, do you think the concept has run its course? And Progress kind of beat me to it. because for Natural Progression 4, they're having a women's title tournament, basically, as the Progression 4 series. Because I really felt that this was kind of a weak field for...
Yeah.
And it felt like the normal standard stipulations of, you know, you lose and you're not really in the promotion, they weren't being adhered to in the slightest. Tyler Bates back, he's around in every... even Damian Dunn, after he'd been knocked out, was in a tag match in Manchester. So they've got more cards to fill. They've got more spots to fill. They can't really do the Natural Progression Series the way they did it before, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. They need to wait for a restock of rookies, promising rookies, and the women's tournament for four is a perfect way to do that. You know, I think it's a perfect move because they got a lot of women who they want to feature in a new way. Now, I think getting a women's title is definitely the right move for that division. We'll get onto that next, talking about women's division. But
we have women's division next, yeah.
But I think there is talent down the pipeline, but not just yet. So they need to wait for a restock of rookies in the Projo, maybe from people making their names elsewhere. Then for Natural Progression Series 5, in a couple of years' time, they'll have 8, 9, 10 guys who they can fill the tournament with, and it'd be really good. So hold off on the idea for a bit. Use the women wisely.
I'm glad they've had the chance to switch gears and do something different.
Yeah.
And I'm also really pleased that when Jim Smallman announced that they were going to do this at the top of Chapter 29, that the crowd popped really hard for it.
Yeah. It's something people want to see.
Yeah, I think this is the case with Progress when they started putting women's matches on. They really weren't sure what the reaction was going to be.
Mm.
And it's been overwhelmingly positive. And they've kind of taken that and run with it because some of the booking that they've done, I think we need to kind of go into this now because this is the next match. But the booking of Ginny and Elizabeth has been absolutely inspired.
Modern day Ted DiBiase and Virgil, except Virgil's kind of good.
But the thing is, like, they built it up so well that, I mean, the next match was Pollyanna and a mystery partner against Dahlia Black and a mystery partner, and basically the girls had to pick their opponent's partner.
Yeah.
So Dahlia Black picks Ginny to be Pollyanna's partner, and then Pollyanna comes out and picks Elizabeth to be Dahlia Black's partner. I've got that the right way around, haven't I? Yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't listening hard enough. Basically, Elizabeth was teaming with Dahlia Black and Jin. So they swapped the faces and heels because they were picking each other's. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. So that and I like the fact that everyone in this match hates each other for various reasons.
Yeah, they've built up the interrelationships between the characters fantastically well. Like it's enthralling because like the characters are genuinely interesting, and their beefs are genuinely interesting, and it's very exciting to see where it goes, and everything sort of came to a head in this match.
Yeah, it's the booking on it has been a lot better than WWE's mentality at the moment, forever, has been that women just hate each other. And that's it. That's the beginning, middle, and end of the booking strand is women just hate each other. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Whereas here they've deliberately built stuff up so people have grudges with each other for legitimate reasons. And then you've got Ginny, who at the moment is probably the best heel in Europe. And they've got. Well, you look at the heat she gets when she comes out.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Because in an OTT, she's like getting like ballistic
heat. Devil.
The devil could walk out and get less heat than Ginny in OTT.
It's gotten to the point where our good podcasting friend Ian is legitimately scared of her.
She has a very... I was sitting next to the stage for this, and I would like to talk about like everyone's entrances for this match because it was great. But Ginny just has such a scary face. She looks like she just wants to like stare your face off when she looks at you. Like,
did she stare at you?
She may. I don't know. Maybe.
You were hiding, weren't you?
I had my head firmly under my hoodie. Didn't want to gaze into the eyes.
Yeah, because she almost got in a fight with somebody just on the way to the ring.
Oh, yeah, that was great. Because I have a suspicion that it was a plant, because there's always some guy standing in that same spot who gets into an argument with someone like Paul Robinson or Jimmy Havoc, and they have a bit of a push. And now it was a girl in the same spot. Maybe it's just coincidence, but she was in the same spot. But maybe. But that was fantastic.
And so that worked well. And then you got Elizabeth being named as Dahlia's tag team partner. The pop she got was ridiculous.
Stone Cold Elizabeth Austin.
The roof came off. It was like, what? Damn.
And I love just how like unassuming Elizabeth is, because she's got this. She's so uncharismatic. She turns around into actually being very charismatic, because like she's playing this whole unassuming every girl character, and Ginny just despises, and it makes her so sympathetic, because Ginny's just like acting her ass off, and then Elizabeth's just kind of standing there doing what a normal person would do, and just kind of no selling her. There's a great dynamic between all four of these women that they've built up, and it takes little character interactions like Ginny getting into an argument with someone at ringside and all that stuff to build that up. And all, I'll just say about Dahlia Black briefly, like when they were escorting TK Cooper off the premises because he wasn't allowed at ringside, the fear in her eyes being torn away from her lover was incredible. So it's just little things like that that build up their characters and make the wrestling a lot more interesting. And the women have done a great job of that so far.
It's interesting that they've decided to use Jack Sexsmith in the midst of this, because he didn't really have anything to do, and we're kind of critical of his in-ring work that he's had so far interacting with the menfolk. Kind of putting him in here, it gives the division an extra dimension as well, because they've kind of put him sort of in the middle of all this to kind of add characters.
Yeah, in Endeavor, they're doing a Dahlia versus Pollyanna singles match with Sexsmith as referee. So we'll see where that goes. Presumably, he's going to get into a feud with TK Cooper, and that'll be like a low-level feud or a Endeavor feud to give those guys something to do. I wouldn't read too much into it.
Yeah, but it's interesting that they're using characters beyond the four women here, five if you include Toni Storm. It's interesting that they're kind of branching out a little bit and kind of incorporating them into the rest of the show. So they're not just like their own little segment. They're kind of part of the bigger tapestry.
We talked a lot about the characters, but what do you think of the match itself? Like how
the match was down? It was all storyline. Short. Elizabeth kind of beat Ginny with a lung blow, where she kind of jumped her from behind and just laid her out. So it was really short. I mean, I don't think it's even like rateable because it's such a short match. But everything that they did was perfect.
Obviously, we're still waiting for like a big, like excellent singles match that doesn't use like gimmicks for these women, but presumably it's coming, and they're building it up, and whoever gets the spot to do that, possibly Polly and Ginny even, or Ginny and Elizabeth, I think they could deliver something pretty awesome, so we'll wait and see.
Be interesting to see what happens when Progression 4 starts, because they've got Well, they've got five names for it.
Presumably
there's eight.
Well, they in every natural wrestling series, they've always done a multi-man match in one of the qualifiers, in one of the first round matches, so three or four people in it. So maybe 9 or 10 names. So maybe 4 or 5 still to be announced. Are there any women around that you would like to see in there?
Yeah, but WWE keeps signing them all. I don't know if Kaylee Ray has gone, actually.
She hasn't gone yet. Around. Nikki Storm has
Nikki
signed.
Storm's gone. She's now Nicola Glenn Cross.
Fair enough.
She's like calling Brian Locke Logan. So those would have been like the main two that I really would have wanted to see, but I'm sure they'll select somebody worthwhile to pad out the field. I certainly think you're looking at if they are going with these talents here, I think you're looking at a final that's going to involve Pollyanna and one of the others.
Now, Pollyanna and Ginny from day one have been built as the two, the top face and the top heel.
They have Ginny lose to Elizabeth.
Yeah.
The tournament to kind of set up something else between
They've sort of built up Elizabeth on Endeavor as well. They've been throwing her kind of big wins, like very quick wins over other people. Mm. So they're building her up as well.
You might have Bea Priestley in there, possibly.
Potentially.
Was one of them, if they just wanted somebody to sacrifice as a first round. Because she's okay, but she's kind of inexperienced.
Yeah. Well, they said they were not going to start it immediately, so
planning.
Yeah, we'll see when they start it. So it might be after Brixton.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if they go all out and bring in somebody big from outside.
International name or two might be cool.
It's just whether they want to go that way, because it'd be a national progression. Natural progression. you'd probably think that they don't want to throw in any big names from outside, but we'll see what happens.
So it's good that we're hyped for that, and the stories are all kind of coming to a head. We'll see over the next couple of months how they build to Brixton.
Yeah, it's an intriguing division they've got there already. Mm. I mean,
because all new faces. Like in all the other spots on the card, it's like established people. We kind of know what we're getting into, but with the women, it's all like it's all new talent. It's all like previously unfeatured talent. So we're sort of discovering them each time they come out. So it's exciting.
What was the deal with Pollyanna sitting on the iron?
Oh, it's because she's like her gimmick is that she's the Khaleesi. They don't really play up it in progress, but like her nickname's like the Khaleesi of Chaos. So. She's like a big game. Her entrance theme is the Game of Thrones theme, but
I did notice that
techno Game of Thrones. That was awesome live. Like I wasn't expecting it, and there it was.
I was wondering what the deal was. Did they borrow it from somewhere, or
did they build it?
I don't know.
Because it looked great.
Somebody had the theory that that was going to be the women's championship, which. After the lengthy debate we had last time, well, myself and Dan had last time about what the Atlas Championship would look like. I don't know if you heard that. That was a ridiculous conversation. But the women's title, if it was like a Game of Thrones style throne, that would be pretty much the coolest championship.
Now that it's not going to be, now I'm just sad. Because Like, that's always cool when someone gets to sit on a chair and... Oh, it sounds really stupid. When someone gets to sit on a big, championship chair, like King of a Ring or Triple H's entrances. I love that stuff.
Well, instead of a wrestling match, they could just have, like, musical chairs and just kind of take one out of the ring. And then they fight over the chair and the one who's, last one who
don't,
sat down is...
Don't give TNA ideas.
That's a perfectly good idea for TNA. They can run with that. I'll let them have it.
Getting back on track, the second Atlas tournament match of the show, Joe Kofi versus Rampage Brown, went to a bloody draw. Can you believe it?
I can, and this was a terrific match.
Oh, yeah. This was big lads wrestling at its best.
It was big lads wrestling.
I was jumping out of my seat at certain points of this one.
I kind of thought at some point we'll probably see like two guys just leathering each other, but the way that they did it, I mean, they were doing running shoulder block challenges on the floor, and it's just, you just got two big guys running into each other and just bouncing off like just this slap of flesh as they kind of run into each other. I don't think they really have either of these guys have the consistency of like a Daisuke Sekimoto or Yuji Okabayashi.
Oh, well, that's the elite of the elite, big man.
But yeah, that's kind of what they were going for, and it's kind of a step below that, but it was still a very strong match.
Yeah, and like they sort of telegraphed it was going to be a draw, but I didn't really mind. Like there was urgency in the finale. And like you say, they were just battering each other, and big power moves, big running strikes, you know, big lads wrestling. This is what we wanted, and this is what we're getting.
Yeah, it was like, I don't know how much cricket you watch, but it was like a limited overs cricket game.
Yeah, yeah.
Towards the end, when they were just battering each other with these big shots, it was like everyone's trying to hit a six off every ball. That's what it was like. They'd go for the knockout blows. But it wasn't just, you know, two big guys punching each other all match. The Joe Coffey threw in a double springboard crossbody off the top rope in there.
Coffey is an athletic man. And it was good to see him be over very quickly with the crowd. Like, everyone knew who he was, knew the Iron Man shtick. So
everyone loves the Iron Man shtick.
Now, this is definitely the stronger block. You said you couldn't remember what the blocks were earlier.
I can't remember who's in which block.
There's the Mastiff block. The Mastiff and a bunch of other guys. And this is a block where you generally don't know who's going to win. I think all four of the guys on this show are in one block. And then it's Mastiff, T-Bone, Reese, and someone else in the other block.
It's Big Daddy Volta, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, Volta. I think these are the four better guys. And it's unpredictable as to who's going through.
Dan seemed to think Mastiff was winning the whole thing.
Mastiff is definitely he's definitely in the final. Like, just the way they built the, like, on the first show they announced it, like, he was like a prominent feature on that show, getting a big victory over Johnson and then interfering in the main event. Like, he's the one built up to at least get to the final, which makes this the unpredictable block. So that's just the way I see it.
Yeah, I'm still not sure who to go for in terms of overall winner. I was kind of leaning towards Damo before the tournament started, but I know the way that he's been booked in progress, I'm really not sure now. Mm.
And like O'Connor, he's the ICW champ, and he's well promoted in Rev Pro, so I don't know if they want to commit to him because he has all these other commitments elsewhere.
I figure that they're creating another championship to give themselves another potential main event, because they don't really need to have the title defended on every show. So it'd be something where they could build something up as a big Atlas match to headline a chapter show, so they didn't need to have the champion in a title defense for the Progress World title. So yeah, be interesting to see how they go with that. The secondary main event on this show was the Origin, or four of them, going up against the London Riots and FSU.
With some very confusing stipulations, I might add.
if the Origin won, all four of them were entered into the Super Strong Style 16. And if the other team won, whoever got the pin, their team would get a tag title shot.
Those were the stipulations, yeah. But I feel like when the match was originally announced, they said that none of the Origin would be in the Super Strong Style. And they called an audible between announcing the match and putting the match on, because I can't find the original announcement anywhere. I tried to, like, look it up, and maybe I just didn't look hard enough, but I couldn't find it. I just feel certain that that's what they announced and then reneged on it quickly. I don't know, but that's what we ended up with.
But then they lost anyway, so...
Yeah.
Well, this was kind of a fun enough match. I didn't think it was as good as the straight-up one with FSU against Ligero and Cruz from the Chapter 28.
Oh, yeah, that was much better than this. Cause...
That was really good.
But this was still a fun, like, semi-main to everyone get their stuff in and jump around.
It was a booking deal that made it, because you had... two of the guys get eliminated from the babyface side.
Yeah.
They kind of took them out of the match and then brought them back in later. And I don't know if Eddie Dennis kind of got the timing wrong on his return, but he kind of came back when everyone was down and it kind of took away from it a little bit. But yeah.
I did like the way they sort of made Andrews and James Davis, I believe. No, was it Rob Lynch?
It was Rob Lynch.
Rob Lynch. They made Andrews and Lynch team up and sort of form an unlikely alliance just to try and survive against the Origin before their partners came back. And their partners came back in some cool spots. Like, I think like Eddie Dennis came back, he was like screaming and like everyone turned around to like see this fired up guy take the fight to the Origin, even though you say everyone was down. I feel, yeah, I think the timing was right.
I think with the tagging with Rob Lynch and Mark Andrews at one point being a team, it kind of might have been more interesting if they'd have won, because then it would have been Rob Lynch and Mark Andrews with the title shot.
That's an interesting way of thinking about it.
But they didn't do that. They did the everyone comes back and then the Riots win.
So the Riots get main event Songstar Day 1 for the second year in a row. Because last year they were getting revenge on Havoc and Robinson, and this year they very well could take the titles off of the Origin here.
But it's a case of like if they don't, then who are they going to build up after that?
Yeah,
because they've already done FSU.
I don't know if they want to keep the Origin's last stand to Brixton, but this is also a really big show for them, so I feel like they can send the crowd home happy for the second year in a row with a Riots victory. And the Riots had never won the Progress Tag titles, so it would mean a lot for them to pull through on the TLC stipulation of surviving, potentially never tagging again, survive that, win the tag title shot the next show, and then the show after that win the tag titles. I feel like that would be a very good little arc for them and pay that story off really well.
That makes sense. So, hopefully it'll happen.
Yeah, we'll see what happens at Strongstar. Are you going to the tournament?
I'm not. I've actually haven't got it in the diary, so I don't know when it is.
29th, 30th, the bank holiday.
Yeah, that's June, isn't it?
May.
Oh, so, is it?
In like 3 weeks' time. The next show will be a preview.
Right, okay. Yeah, I'm not. I'm working. Such is life. So, anyway, there is one match left on this show, the Progress World title match between Marty Scurll and Tommy End. This following on from End answering the open challenge from Marty on Chapter 28 and kicking his head off to get a win there. That was a really good match.
Yeah.
This one was shaping up to be even better until the finish, which I wasn't keen on.
Yeah, the finish was a dud. We'll say that. Like, it enhanced the storyline for a match down the line. But yeah. I feel like this is something I was talking about in my little bit in the F4W newsletter this week is... Because there's more shows now, like they're not running shows every 8 weeks, they're running shows like every month or even more often than that. I feel like there's less pressure for them to make each show really big. Like, it's no longer must see live, oh, I must get a ticket to see this. like you're starting to pick and choose shows you go and see live or whatever, and that sort of thing leads to more. I'm trying to find the words. More bullshit finishes, basically. Like, they're not trying to deliver big on every single main event. Some main events are to get you to the next show.
I can see the issue that they've got here, and that's that they really need to build this match up between End and Whiplash. So they feel that by interrupting the main event with it, it kind of gives that match more gravitas when it comes round. But in doing so, they sacrifice the finish to this show.
It depends on the way you see it. You can either see it as, oh, fuck Michael Whiplash, he ruined a great main event, or fuck them for ruining a great main event that I, you know, spent a lot of money buying the train tickets and that to come down and watch only to get screwed over and now I have to go home grumpy. Like, you either get mad at the wrestler or you get mad at the promotion, and it's a difficult balance to pull, and I don't feel this one really pulled it that well, just because Whiplash...
I think it's Whiplash, though. It's like, you kind of have to be into him to be into the finish.
Whiplash was so out of the blue, and you have to know about the Legion and their story going on in other promotions. Like, you need to...
Don't watch ICW, you don't watch WXW, then you probably don't know what's going on.
Yeah, you know, like, it was so out of the blue. Whiplash was, like, shouting, "It's my time, it's my time." But no, it's not, because you've only had one match in progress for the last 2 years, and you lost it. So, you know, you can be in the strong style, sure, but you can't, like, claim that you should be in the title shot instead of End, or, like, betraying your best friend because you're jealous of him or whatever. It felt rushed, and it felt like a very unsatisfying ending to the show. And the match before it was just getting going. It was, like, just... like, really starting to pick up and become really good, and then lights go out, and it's the end of the show. You know,
enjoy the work in this one. I think the striking, the countering in it was really good. I think these are two guys who can have, like, a genuine match of the year contender if they're given the opportunity to. I think it's...
Do you think that the narrative of Tommy End can't have good singles matches is broken, or...?
Well, I didn't agree with that in the first place. Like, I was the guy that was sat here going, well, what's wrong with putting Tommy End in singles? He's great. So, for me, he's had two really strong matches with Marty Scurll. I don't think there's any problem with him in singles. I can understand people preferring him in tags, because he's such a good tag team wrestler, but that doesn't preclude him from having singles matches.
He's better in tags, I think. But he showed something here. He needs, like, a proper big-time main event that doesn't have a bullshit finish to really show what he's got, because this match was just getting going, and I was just starting to get into it. Because, to be honest, like, this was a long show. Like, they'd had 7 matches beforehand. I was a bit tired heading into the match. I wasn't making much noise, like, leading into it. I know, right? So it took me a while to really get into it and get into what they were doing, but I was just starting to really think, oh, mate, this is becoming a really good match, and then it just ended like that. So it was a little disappointing, so hopefully they have a third match where they get to finally just show exactly what they can do.
Yeah, despite the finish, I still feel it's a good show.
This
is just very solid show.
This was a strong show all around. Picard. Like, had two really strong matches, well, three really strong matches, Webster the Sabre, Gallagher Dunn, Coffee Brown. You had the very intriguing women's division continuing to enhance, you know, Elizabeth's big moment. Pastor William Eva winning the MPS and, like, having that cool moment with his buddies in the ring.
It does occur to me that we haven't really put William Eva over at all.
We've sort of skipped his win completely because we were talking about Moser. But yeah, what do we think about Eva now having that title shot and maybe getting a push up the card?
I can see him in a title match. When I was talking to, I can't remember if this was you and Rob or whether it was Dan on the last one, but I remember talking about Eva and saying that of all the guys that were in the Natural Progression series, he's the one guy I could see going and having a title match.
Yeah.
And now he's won it, I can totally see him going and having a title match. When they choose to do that, I don't know.
I have, on Twitter, I have fantasy booked Skrull, Eva, main eventing Brixton. It's a risk, I would say, but if you really want to make Eva a top star and you want to put over your Projo guy, do it on your biggest show of the year. Is that too much, or is that a possibility?
I can see that. If he came out and said, I want the title shot at Brixton, I think he'd get a big reaction. I think you'd have to look at the card as a whole as to whether that would be an issue, because I think you need to build a strong card for your biggest show.
Because they're going to load up that card, so it doesn't really matter if Eva is in the main event and he's all unproven in the main event. Because they're going to have loads of other great matches.
Super Card of Honor show over the WrestleMania weekend. Yeah. They put Leo Rush in that match. 19
years old. So do a Leo Rush and put Eva in the big spot and see what happens. You know, because if you use it on a regular chapter show, then it's big, but it isn't really big. You know, I just feel like he's their guy. He's their self-made guy. You know, so they want to do something with him. So
I think it
why
comes
not
down to the booking around the super sweet. I've cocked that up again.
SSS.
You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, whoever wins that, I think you're looking at the title match for Brixton.
Oh, you think they'd do a G1 thing?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. But then again, it depends who wins it, and it depends whether Skrull's still champion then, because we're still talking 6 months away.
Yeah. It's actually only 4 months away. It's sooner than you think. Because we're in May now, September. And it's at the end of September, but it's still in September. So it's sooner away than you think. They don't have that many shows before then. Like, we feel like, it's ages away. It's creeping up.
Something else might be 6 months away. I know what it is. It's ICW's big show.
Yes. Yeah. God, it's
about 6 months away.
Time's flying. I feel like we're only talking about that one a month ago.
Like, it'd been a year and now it's 6 months already. There's a lot to look forward to. It's the joy of wrestling.
Yeah,
so are you going to the Super Strong Style 16?
I am going both days because I'll finish my exams by then. I couldn't go last year because I was in the middle of exams, but this year they're earlier, so I will be partying with the wrestling people that bank holiday, and that is very exciting. I guess we're going to preview it next episode. But they have announced a few guys for it. We don't have them on hand right now. They've announced, like, Matt Cross, you know, Son of Havoc.
Yeah, Tommy N's in there.
Sammy
Whiplash
Callahan.
Is in there, isn't he? Callahan.
Whiplash is
Mark Haskins did a big deal at the start of this show where he came out and asked to be in there.
Yeah. Zack Sabre Jr. Pete Dunne. So Pete Dunne has earned himself a regular spot in the Progress rotation now with that performance. So it's shaping up very nicely.
Gibson is not in there, which I think we were talking about Gibson being a potential winner at one point.
I think they will announce Gibson. Gibson and Mastiff, I think, will be in there.
Even though they lost the the match.
No, they said that not all of the Origin will be in if they lose, but some of them will. This is what I was talking about earlier with them sort of reneging on the stipulation.
A bait and switch on that one. Also, next time out, we'll be talking about the WXW Superstars of Wrestling show, which I was going to review for Voices of Wrestling, but I've spent the entire day catching up on other stuff. So I haven't, but I'll try and watch that tomorrow. So that review should be up, and then we'll talk about it next time. Also, we might even be doing the OTT show next time, a preview of. Rob has actually written down what the what the show is, and he's put OTT EBTB TOB preview, and I don't know what that is.
I think he's added in a few extra acronyms there. I think it's even better than our best, and he's put in an extra B and a T. So
even better than our best.
Yeah, that is very better.
That's massively better.
So yeah, it's an exciting show coming up.
So we were talking about that, soon. And then we've got an awful lot of other stuff coming up. We've got Rev Pro doing the big York Hall show with Kurt Angle, and in July they're running Summer Sizzler, which we're all going to, and we're all sat in the same block. Not only are we all sat in the same block, but I think everyone we know from like wrestling Twitter is all sat in block G. So we're going to have a block party.
Yeah. So yeah, the summer of Britwrest has almost begun.
And I'm actually going to something before that, but I can't tell you about it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
I am sworn to secrecy until it's been taped.
Blue balling.
Yeah. And I really want to tell you, but I can't. But that's also in June. So by the time we get around to Summer Sizzler, I'll be able to tell you about it.
Oh, okay. So, Summer of Britwrest is on. The secret Summer of Britwrest is on.
The secret Summer of Britwrest.
Shall we get some plugs in?
Plugs? Well, last time I said I'm not going to bother plugging anything, so it never makes a damn bit of difference to my Twitter. And I have gained 20 followers since then.
Don't care mentality has actually gained me a shitload of followers.
So
you know, find us.
I'm gonna stick with it.
We're not gonna brag about what we're doing. Just find us.
Yeah. You going for that approach as well?
I'll just say Twitter, another Ollie. Mm. And yeah, that's all.
At another Ollie. And with that, we're done for whatever episode of the Brit Wrestling Roundtable this was. I'm going to say 16. Was it 16 or was the last one 16?
No one even cares anymore.
Nah. Okay. On that note, it's goodbye from Ollie.
Cheers and goodbye.
And good evening from myself. And we'll see you next time.